This is Dean Whitbread for the Anglo-Irish Conspiracy, which I've decided to rename our wonderful Cross the Waters podcast. And I hope it meets with your approval. Now, what sparked me to begin this different approach to the podcast is reading the BBC News, which is something I do frequently. Obviously, the BBC, the bastion of all that's real and true and can be trusted. Of course, we all believe that. But no, the BBC News, you know, is fairly reputable and often leads me to do my own research, which is one of the things I like about the BBC is they will put links through to other sites and in a very nice, easy-to-follow way. So you can research. Now, they've put some data up from Food from Britain. Now, I don't know quite who this strange-sounding quango or promotional organisation for the manufacturers more or the exporters more likely. I don't know quite who they are. Food from Britain.
Food from Britain.
But anyway, whoever they are, they've got some data. The BBC have gotten hold of it, and it's all about exports, food exports. Now, the top 10 UK food and drink export markets 2006. Number one, Ireland. £1.993 billion. That's double that in dollars, isn't it? Because it's $2 to the pound at the moment. So, but hey, let's get away from money. This is about food. So, Ireland, $1.993 billion. France, $1.373 billion. US, $901.3 million. And Spain, $725.8 million. Germany, $607.9 million. The Netherlands, $513 million. Etc. It goes down the list. Now, Ireland. That's a lot of money from Ireland. You like our food? Brilliant. Who buys what? Number one is tea, Canada, 21.1%. Then beer, France, 41.4%. The fact that the French buy our beer tells me a lot. Whiskey to the US, 16.5%. And cheese to Ireland, 34%. And the percentage is the total UK exported product going to the country. And that comes from the Customs and Excise, which I'm likely to believe. It slightly scares me that Ireland is spending £1.993 million a year on food, and most of it's cheese. What are you doing with all our cheese? I thought you had the best pastures in the world, the best dairy and beef herds in the world, the envy of the world, the most traceable, clean food. And yet you're buying all of our cheese. I don't know what it is. I remember distinctly for years and years and years before the EU was even a reality, you could get Irish cheese, and Irish cheddar was one of the things that we used to prefer. So what's happened here over the last 20, 25 years? There's been a switch around. And now suddenly we're selling you all of our cheese, or an awful lot of cheese. Where is the cheese going? Where is the cheese of Britain going? Apart from down your gobs. So I'm posing this question to you out of concern, really, because, as we know, cheese is the devil's food, and adds love handles to your love handles and spreads your ass very, very far wide, both sides. And, you know, we're suffering from an epidemic of obesity in this country, following along from America. And let's face it, there's only one country that loves America more than Britain and wants to copy them even more, and that is Ireland. So, I'm concerned about this, chaps, that you're buying all of our cheese, you're going to eat it, you're going to get into terrible health problems, and you'll all be dying in your 50s of appalling heart problems from all the saturated fat. One last stat before passing over to you, Brian, and I'm hoping you're going to just tag something onto the end of this, and we can go back and forth a few times till we've got our podcast. The biggest food and drink exports, what were they? Well, number one was whiskey, number two is meat. Beef has been finally on. We can now export beef for the first time in 10 years, and apparently it's given a lovely fillip to our exports. So it won't be Prince Philip then, because he's not very much of a lovely fillip. Beer, 402 million. Chocolate, 290 million. And breakfast cereal. Something beautiful about the fact that people are buying cornflakes from Britain. Cornflakes and Shreddies and Weetabix. That somehow cheers me up. Boxes and boxes of semi-nutritious tat to pour down the gullets of hungry children, making sure that by 10 a.m. every day they're starving. because there's so little nutritional value in what they've been given to eat at 7 o'clock in the morning. Thank you, Brian, and over to you for your comments and your continuation.
Hello, Dean. It's Brian here. Just got your audio blog post on food and cheese, and wonderful. Where are we eating all this cheese? We must be buying cheeseburgers by the dozen. Yes, that's it. We're going down to Burger King and McDonald's and getting double cheeseburgers, where the double is two slices of cheese. Cue McDonald's Girl by Dean Friedman. Yeah, that would go down nice now. I want an order with fries, quarter pounder with cheese. I love the light in your eyes. Will you go out with me, please? I don't know. We can't be eating that much cheese. 34% of 2 billion. Or maybe we're just skewing the numbers in a really bizarre way. But it is a lot of cheese. We make cheese here, so this is why it puzzles me. We make so much cheese that we export it. Galty, Mitchellstown, famous valleys and vales of the south where our cheese comes from. There's Dubliner cheese, there's cheese everywhere. And yes, we do eat too much of it ourselves. What is it with food and television? By the way, I'm on a really, really bad microphone today, because I'm trying to do this quick responsiveness thing. What is it with these TV programs and food? Food is now entertainment. If you are a teleworker and you happen across the television screen in between meetings and work and finding your dressing gown and whatever teleworkers do, you find television programs that are focused on, and here's a celebrity chef who used to be a celebrity chef but now he's a TV anchor host, and he's got other celebrity chefs in who are going to tell us how to skin a kiwi and turn it into a lovely something. All day, all channels, copy, 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 format, format, format. Boring. Okay, it's not for me. Obviously the people in TV land know that these formats work. They are popular, and they'll continue ramming them down our throats. But does anybody eat the food that these people are presenting? And while I say presenting, they're not really eating it, they're making it to present. They're making things that are aesthetically beautiful for cameras, that are colourful. I wonder what they've done it in black and white television days. No, Ireland has moved away from being an agricultural base. Oh, how I switch topics back to Ireland's industry. We are now, we found a new addiction. So we're not addicted on agriculture anymore. We're addicted on building houses that people will not afford or live in. So we just build houses upon houses upon houses. We have such a property boom that has gone past the summit and is way extended over the edge, waiting to fall over and crash down into oblivion. We have property, we have people, 25% of all male workers in the country are involved in construction. We have huge immigrant workforce engaged in construction. Construction, construction, construction. Houses, apartments, flats, complexes, commercial buildings, more houses, more apartments, more flats. We are now heading into an election and we will be stuffing envelopes indoors and we'll be going, do you think anybody lives here? Whole roads, I've done it already, I've been on roads and they haven't been sold and they're sitting there 4 or 5 months. You can tell by the depth of the grime that has amounted on the letterbox. These houses are not occupied. They will not be occupied. They weren't bought to be occupied, they were bought to rent. They were investment opportunities by people. And they're going to see them get more expensive in repayments as the interest rates rise and rise and rise. So that's our new addiction, housing. It's not agriculture anymore. Pity, because agriculture, we all need to eat. We all need to be homed and cheaply, but that's not the incentive that they were putting the money into housing for. So back to cheese, where is it all going? This is a conspiracy, and I think we need to not just sound off in blog terms, I think we have to get the looking glass out. We have to get the magnifying glass. That's the word I was looking for. And we need to dig deep and look under those figures that were reported by the BBC and see how accurate and true they are, and see if there are grains of truth in it. How can it be this way? Because it is bizarre, it is unusual, and well spotted. Back over to you, and let's see where this one ends up.
Well, I've had a long think about the state of Irish housing, and I've had a long think about cheese. And the obvious conclusion to reach is that the houses in Ireland are being built using cheese as a construction material. Now, I know that this sounds a little bit crazy, and it's just obviously putting two and two together and reaching 98. But think about it. We're in the age of biofuels. We're in the age of growing rapeseed oil in order to power our cars. We're burning household rubbish in order to fuel electricity in power stations. Why not use cheese as a building material? In fact, I'm pretty certain that that's where all the cheese is going, because I don't see a huge epidemic of appallingly furred arteries and great fatness in Ireland. When I've been there recently, you know, I have to say that, you know, a cursory examination of the physique of the people that I saw in the street, I'd say that there was very little difference. Perhaps even that the Irish people I saw were a tad more svelte than their UK counterparts. But that's not the point. The point is, there was once a woman who came to live with us. And she was an unfortunate woman. And I use that word not as a patronising term, but she really was unfortunate. She'd had an awful life. She'd been a highly intelligent mathematics prodigy when she was young. She'd gone to Cambridge University. While she was at Cambridge University, she had a very ill-advised love affair with a very manipulative person who belonged to a religion, which was one of these offshoots of the sort of the 70s, 60s, 70s hippie-type religions, where they had ashrams and they'd take you out of your normal environment, and you'd be kind of converted in the way that some cults do, the Moonies, for example, or the communists. No, I didn't really say that, but you know what I mean. Certain sort of cliques form, and you know, you have to. The peer pressure is very intense, and you really have to not just belong by showing up. You have to belong morally, spiritually, intellectually. They really want to own you. Well, they took my unfortunate friend, who I will refer to as Beanie. They took Beanie and they took her to Africa, where she lived for several months in this ashram somewhere in Central Africa. I think it was Nigeria even, but it was somewhere like right in the middle of Africa, where she was kind of disconstructed, deconstructed, and eventually used and abused by the people in this supposedly spiritual place. And she developed serious mental health problems, and so she came back to Britain, and she was without the relationship, and she was without the support of the previously all-encompassing religion, and she fell apart. She was already pretty ill mentally, and she really did fall apart, and she was sectioned, which means certificatedly stuck into a mental institution. And she was diagnosed with schizophrenia, which these days doesn't mean anything, because they've decided that schizophrenia is too broad a term for too many different kind of illnesses. But, you know, she had that level of mental problem that she was living in a world that didn't resemble the world that we would all look around and agree upon. And she, in a way, was a saint. She really was. She was an incredibly nice person. When I say she was a saint, she was a misguided saint. Beanie was the kind of person who would decide, for example, that one of the problems with people was their health. So, for example, she would decide that somebody looked very, very, very unhealthy, and she would talk them out of their burger, or she'd try and talk them out of the burger whilst they were buying it. So she would be ejected after several attempts at this from the burger bar that she was in, and chucked out onto the McDonald's pavement. So she wasn't a handy person to have around if you're a capitalist in that way, and trying to make some money from selling burgers. She decided to fast. In her fasting, she had this vision that the King's Cross prostitutes and the men that used them should be helped. And after she'd lost lots of weight, she decided that this was the time she'd go and help them. And she helped them by dressing up in the most vampish costume that I've ever seen anybody dress in, having shed, I mean, I don't know, possibly a stone or two of weight. So this suddenly thin, incredibly exotically dressed woman emerged from the fast and went off to King's Cross and started helping the prostitutes and the men by donating her services for free, which of course caused a riot, in fact, and several violent altercations. And I don't know how she escaped with that one, to be honest with you, with her life, except that she seemed to have a charmed life and be able to do things beyond what most of us would ever attempt and get away with them. So Beanie was a really unusual person with really unusual solutions. She was a radical. She was possibly a situationist, although she didn't realise that. She did create situations which were untenable for most people, quite seriously dangerous some of the time, like the time she decided that cars were not the thing that people should be driving around in, and that she would prevent people from using their cars by lying underneath them, which made it very difficult once they knew that she was under there for them to drive off in case they drove over her. So the police had to be called that time. But in her enlightened way, she was wonderful, and she was a committed recycler. She would constantly go around to the back of supermarkets, and she'd look for the sell-by dates, and she'd pull perfectly good food out of the bins. And she would have no compunction doing this. And actually, there is a free food movement now, which, with her saintly attitude and a slightly, well, a more than slightly crazy take on life, she would have probably inspired. So she would rescue perfectly good food that was being thrown away, including cheese, and she would give it to people who needed it. She would literally just, instead of being Oxfam or some sort of NGO or an agency, she was a one-woman powerhouse, and she would just go and feed people with the food. And I'm absolutely certain that nobody was ever killed by being a day out of a day beyond sell-by. So Beanie used to rely on the kind offices of people who knew who she was and would occasionally, you know, rescue her, sign her out of police custody, talk her out from under the car, something I did, and generally intervene on behalf of the rest of the world and really just trying to keep her safe where possible, although it was incredibly tiring and infuriating and upsetting at times. But the funniest and the best time was when friends of mine who lived in a Victorian terrace house and 10 steps up to the front door high above the street level, and Beanie had been around and she disappeared for a few days. And then my friend came out, it was a sunny morning, taking the kids to school, opened the door, looked down at the steps, and the steps had been beautifully tiled with cheese. Beanie had gone round the back of Sainsbury's, she found a whole load of single slices of squares of cheese and decided that actually, rather than use this as eating material, and so she had employed cheese as a building material, in fact as a decorative building material, and paid the great compliment and almost the thank you, really, I suppose it was, because it was a thank you to the people who'd been looking after by paving their stairs, their steps with cheese. And I'll never forget the tears of laughter that fell from the face of my friend as she told me what had happened, and the pain that we laughed through, because it was really difficult living with this crazy woman. The pain and the joy of the craziness and the brilliant secondary use of the cheese slices. Absolutely marvellous moment. So there is a precedent for using cheese as a building material, albeit by a schizophrenic mathematics genius who'd been religioned out of her sanity. We never know. Beanie disappeared. She constantly did disappear and came back and disappeared until finally she actually disappeared and didn't come back. She may be an island. Maybe she's joined the builders. I mean, absolutely possible. Anything is possible. So think twice. Look up at the roofs. Look into your bathrooms. Double check. Are any of those tiles cheese? I wouldn't be surprised if they are. This is Dean signing off for the Anglo-Irish conspiracy. I can't remember what number it is, but really, it doesn't matter. What matters is that you're listening. Thank you for listening. The music you've been listening to during this podcast is from Magnatune, Cheryl Ann Fulton, The Once and Future Harp, and also Artemis, Gravity. And from Primonet, Polymorphic Convolutions, from Somptin Happening. Full details available on the website, www.angloirish.info. Don't forget to complain.